guys, and welcome to the Moms and Mysteries podcast, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my dear friend, Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Mandy. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. We are well into April, which I've said in past years on the show is the busiest month for me. I have like everybody I know has a birthday in April. There's a lot going on. I have friends that are getting married. They're taking a trip to Denver at the end of the month. And I'm going. Did I tell you that?
No, you didn't tell me this.
I don't know how I forgot to tell you this. I'm actually super excited. I have never been on, like, I've been to like bachelorette celebrations and things like that, but I've never been on like a whole thing. So this friend of mine, you know who it is actually. It's my friend Stacy. In the very beginning of our podcast, she used to make the artwork for each episode.
She's awesome.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love her so much. She's getting married. And like I said, they're doing like a bachelorette weekend and she invited me and I was like, you know what?
Oh, that's awesome.
I think I will go. So I'm going to that. So yes, April is turning out to be pretty okay so far.
Okay. Well, I've been knee deep into vomit this week, but good for you and your trip to freaking Colorado. Actually, I've always really wanted to visit Colorado, so you'll have to tell me about it. And I that's like on my, I hate to say bucket list because that sounds like I need a bucket list, but I'm pretending I'm much younger than I am. It's like a thing I want to do someday, right?
Yes.
That's like better to say.
Yes. I'm flying into Denver International Airport, which is like, of course, you know, a conspiracy theorist. Like dream. I believe I have flown into that airport once before. I've been to Colorado before, but at the time, I don't think I paid attention to like all the stuff at the airport.
The weird horse thing.
So this time I'll be making sure to pay attention to all the artwork on the walls and things like that.
Please, yes. Get pictures for us.
Yes, of course.
Mandy, we will continue this conversation because I will have more questions for you, but maybe you can answer them for me on Patreon at patreon.com/momsandmysteriespodcast. We're doing like a little after show. Maybe that's what we could call it, where it's a little less. Somebody called it Moms and Miscellaneous, and I want to give them credit, but I don't have it. So I think that's the one to do, Moms and Miscellaneous, which is what makes the most sense. I will find you next week, and I will give you a shout out, so I'm sorry. but somebody gave that, and I thought that was great. And so we're just going to talk about the things like the Denver airport and a trip and vomit and whatever else comes up. Patreon.com/momsandmysteriespodcast. You can also get your episodes ad-free, some other goodies, and then we'll have a weekly little Moms and Miscellaneous bonus podcast over there.
I love it. Perfect.
Good.
All right. So the story this week is one that really does have a lot of meat and potatoes, if you want to say it that way.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's an older story, but it really has some of the most unheard of details you can imagine. So because this story deals with a con artist, some of the details do get a little bit hard to follow because, as we know, con artists lie a lot. So it kind of gets, it gets
sort
hard
of
to
think. Yeah.
Right. It gets hard for us to keep their story straight. So to keep it kind of nice and tidy, we're just going to start right at the beginning of Albert Johnson Walker's life. Albert was born in Ontario, Canada in 1945 and grew up as the son of a truck driver in Hamilton. He only had a high school education and eventually he dropped out before he graduated. Albert was a devout Christian who met a woman named Barbara through a church youth group, and the couple eventually got married in 1968. They remained very active in the church, singing in the choir and even teaching Sunday school, and Albert later became an elder in the church. At some point, Albert and Barbara moved to Scotland for a short time, but they ended up moving back to Canada and settling on a farm near Bright, Ontario. Albert worked as a farm manager in Bright while Barbara went to university to study business. The couple bought a hobby farm in 1978 and went on to raise four children there. The farm also served as a tax shelter for Albert, which I didn't really know what that was, but a tax shelter, I guess, is a term that really just describes any method of reducing your taxable income, which then reduces the amount of taxes you have to pay to the government. So if it sounds kind of like clever, I guess it is. Or sneaky. Yeah. And it's not the only sneaky thing that Albert did regarding money. In 1978, Albert and Barbara started a payroll income tax services company called Walker's Financial Services Incorporated, or WFSI for short. And they soon received around $9 million in investments from two couples that Albert was friends with. The average investment with WFSI was around $50,000, and investors would get a promissory note from the company for, you know, this investment. So Albert started living a very lavish lifestyle, and he bought himself a luxury car, fancy clothes, and he was doing a lot of traveling across Europe, the UK, and North America. In 1980, the couple bought a small bookkeeping business, and that was successful enough that it expanded across southern Ontario by the late 80s and employed around 35 people. In 1982, they incorporated an offshore investment holding company in Grand Cayman Island called United Canvas Corporation Limited. I never can get my brain around how people do financial, like, sneaky things.
Yeah, me either.
I am nowhere near smart enough. Like, whenever you start talking about all these, like, offshore holding companies and, like, how
do
you
convince
– right, but, like, how do you just start up an investment company and convince people to give you $50,000? Like, that part always blows my mind when you hear about these scammers that do this. I'm like, who is giving you – who is investing their money with you, Mr. No One, who just started this company? Like, what is going on here?
No, I absolutely agree with you. It's, all of this makes, like, no sense to me. And then just the idea of how many lies you have to keep up with and how many, like, new things you have to do. We have one company and it's all I can do to make it through the day. Like, we, you know, there's so much going on.
And it's a small company.
I use company very loosely. I think the government calls it that, which is why we're calling it that. So in the spring of 1990, Albert traveled across North America and Europe under the guise of looking for venture capital. Mandy, I want to thank you for adding this. Venture capital, even though I watch Shark Tank from time to time, didn't really know what it meant. It's a form of private equity financing to early stage and startup companies that have been deemed to have high growth potential. Basically, this guy's out there hustling for money. He's allegedly in the process of buying a bank in Florida and an investment firm in London during this time frame as well. Didn't know people own banks, but there's another thing we learned
right,
today.
Didn't know you could just buy a bank.
No. I mean, in Florida, it kind of makes sense. Right. Like, it's a little YOLO down here. So the people or victims who were giving money to Albert's company to invest in business ventures were friends, businessmen, retired farmers, members of Albert's church, and even a former girlfriend. Several investors were elderly people who had invested their whole life savings with WFSI. Albert would steal these people's money and invest it in real estate ventures that would eventually fall through, and Albert would lose the money. Much of this was due to a Canadian housing market crash that happened around the same time. So around 1990, complaints started popping up about Albert's businesses. So an investigation was launched by multiple Canadian law enforcement agencies to find out if everything Albert was doing was legitimate and legal. At this point, many of these investors are demanding their money back, and that turns out, of course, to be a huge nightmare. Albert's clients and others who work closely with him in business matters later talked about the many unpleasant interactions they had with him. The women who Albert had bought the bookkeeping company from said that he was late making payments according to their payment plan all the time. Another client said he had to wait 9 months to collect the earnings of the investment he made with Albert, which that guy is kind of lucky.
I was going to say, right.
Yeah.
Considering the fact that, like, it wasn't really invested money. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like, there's
really
nothing
there. And another woman said she'd sold Albert her tax and bookkeeping company, but he never paid her for it, which caused her to declare bankruptcy.
Yikes. Unfortunately, Albert couldn't stay faithful to his wife Barbara, and his multiple affairs ended up resulting in the breakdown of their marriage. One of Albert's affairs was with a female minister from the church, and that affair resulted in Albert being kicked out of the church. But he was also allegedly having an affair with one of his employees. In the summer of 1980, Albert and Barbara separated, and Albert moved out into an apartment in Brantford with the couple's two oldest kids, Jill and Sheena. Albert originally took all four kids with him, but after a custody battle, a judge decided that the two older girls could stay with Albert and the two younger would live with Barbara, who was still living at the farm. The older girls actually wrote notes stating why they wanted to live with Albert, and in Sheena's note, she said, "I don't feel that the relationship between my mother and I contains enough love and affection for us to be together on a daily basis," which that just honestly broke my heart. But also at this time, she's a teenager. So yeah. I feel like, I don't know.
We both have teenagers at the time. We have opinions. Right now. Yes. Yeah. And so I think this could very well be a very loving mother. And
yes. Agreed. Totally agree.
Just a teenager she's dealing with.
Absolutely. So Albert was ordered to pay $300 a month in child support to Barbara. He later said there had been problems in the marriage with Barbara for over a year before they were separated. Barbara claimed that Albert threatened to kill her and asked the police to grant a protective order to prohibit Albert from being able to come to the farm. There was one occasion where he actually did go to the farm to try and get some of his things, and Barbara called the police and claimed that he broke in, and he ended up being arrested and charged with forced entry. The couple's divorce wasn't finalized until sometime between 1991 and 1993, but in the early days of this divorce, Albert was quite busy stealing money from his clients' investment accounts. Between July of 1990 and December of that year, he had withdrawn over $1 million. On December 5th, while his financial situation was rapidly falling apart, Albert fled to England and took his 15-year-old daughter Sheena with him. He claimed he was taking Sheena on a business trip to Geneva, Switzerland, and they were just going to turn it into a little mini vacation, but the two of them didn't return to Canada when they were expected. Albert had actually arranged to have a dinner with his business partner on December 19th in Canada, but around the time he was supposed to be returning, he called and said that he had to skip this dinner because he was stuck at the airport. His business partner did know that there was bad weather in Europe, so they didn't really think anything of it, but then when Albert and Sheena still did not return home by Christmas, Albert's business partner said he just knew Albert wasn't coming back. Nobody heard from Albert or Sheena after that phone call, and eventually, Barbara had no other option but to report them missing. How scary is this? Like, that your ex-husband has fled the country, taken right. your 15-year-old daughter, and you have literally no idea where they are, what's going on. Like, I mean, it would be one thing if Albert had, like, at least called and said, we're not coming back, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, just to disappear like that with your daughter, like, that had to be such a scary time for
sure. Absolutely for her mom. Terrifying. Mm-hmm. Police eventually determined that Albert used a credit card to make purchases in Switzerland and that he did not use the return tickets that he bought for the flight home. Police then contacted Interpol and a yellow notice went out about the missing father and daughter. Authorities believe that Albert had been planning to disappear like this for about 6 months and that he devised this plan because his life was slowly falling apart due to his financial crimes. So at the time of his escape from Canada, he had over $41,000 in credit card debt and had spent $12,000 on a diamond ring and a pair of earrings, which were thought to be gifts for a woman in Switzerland that he had become romantically involved with. Albert also bought an open airline ticket for $25,000.
Didn't Mandy, know you could do you that.
I, yeah, not familiar. And that's something that allowed him to travel anywhere he wanted to until the $25,000 was used up. What would be the purpose in that? Do you understand that? What am I missing here? Because I'm like, why am I just going to give you $25,000?
Right. Well, it's like a secured line of credit of your own for an airline.
I just what if you develop a fear of flying very quickly?
Right. Like, what if you, that's in. My question. What if you don't use it? And, like, do you get some kind of discount for?
I know. I need front? To see, like, some numbers.
Is there a benefit or is it just something that we don't understand because we don't have $25,000 laying around?
True. And honestly, this guy does some sketchy things. So I'm sure it's sketchy. So meanwhile, there's still a teenage girl missing with Albert, but even though it didn't appear that Albert actually abducted her, it was still illegal for him to take her because he's on the run for financial crimes. In 1992, Sheena was featured on the TV show Missing Treasures, which is about missing children. So according to Barbara, Albert and Sheena were never very close because they were a lot alike, and Sheena also wasn't one that wanted to listen to Albert's orders. Barbara alleged that Albert was actually closer to their oldest child, Jill. And Barbara also alleged that Albert was abusive. One of Sheena's friends told the Atlantic Journal that Sheena had a hard time with her parents' divorce and that Albert started showering Sheena with lavish gifts and attention after the divorce. This same friend said that she felt like Sheena was being intentionally isolated by her dad and that she and Sheena got into an argument before she disappeared and they weren't talking to each other.
It was later revealed that others had been concerned about Albert and Sheena's relationship as well. Friends and family noticed really weird things, like Albert allegedly would talk to Sheena about his sex life and apparently even paid for her to get birth control pills and breast implants, which not usually things that your dad is helping you with. Sheena's friend also said that Albert was controlling and intimidating, and that was probably why Sheena hadn't made any calls or wrote any letters, because she was most likely scared of what Albert would do if he found out that she contacted anyone and, you know, told them where they were. Albert and Barbara's oldest daughter, Jill, didn't really seem to be that concerned over her father and sister being missing, though, and authorities believe that was because she may have still been in contact with them during this time. As Melissa just said, Albert and Jill were a lot closer than the other children, so if she didn't know that they were safe, she probably would have been a lot more concerned. Jill also visited one of Albert's favorite vacation spots in Vermont, but it's not clear whether Albert was there during that trip or not. Albert's abrupt disappearance financially destroyed his ex-wife Barbara. Their divorce actually wasn't final at the time that he fled the country, so she was still on the hook for his, you know, financial crimes and the burden that, that those were carrying. And that included a $90,000 mortgage that Albert had taken out on the farmhouse that Barbara was living in. In 1991, WFSI's stock exchange license was suspended, and the business was forced into bankruptcy in July of that year, with around 130 creditors still waiting to get their money back. In total, Albert had stolen around $4.5 million at that point, and that was money that mostly would not be recovered. And we have so much more to get into after a quick break to hear a word from this week's sponsors. Guess what, guys? It's that time of year again. The birds are chirping, the flowers are blooming, and your mom is secretly hoping you'll get her a skylight frame for Mother's Day. Whether you and your mom live near or far, there's about 100% chance that she wants to see more of you and wishes she could share more of life's little moments with you. Unfortunately, generations of moms before us didn't have a way to stay connected with their families in real time. But this is 2024. There's no reason not to keep mom in the loop anymore when skylight frames are a thing now. The skylight frame is a touchscreen photo frame that your whole family can upload photos to, and they appear in seconds. You get to share your favorite moments with the people that matter most to you. The perfect gift for moms and grandmas. I've been a huge fan of skylight frames for years and have multiple skylight frames in my own home and have even given one to my husband to have in his office. I've gifted skylight frames to several of my friends and family, including one to my mom and one to my grandmother. They both love that it looks like a real photo frame but has a gorgeous touchscreen so they can swipe through all the photos I'm uploading of my kids. What's even cooler is that anyone can send photos to the frame by using the app or even just through the email, so other members of my family, like my sister, can contribute to the frame as well, and my mom can see all of her kids and grandkids in one place, right there on her skylight frame. But the best part of it all is that you don't even have to be there to help set it up. Even the least tech-savvy can have it up and running in less than 60 seconds. As a special limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a skylight frame when you go to skylightframe.com/mysteries. That's skylightframe.com/mysteries. Mother's Day is coming right up, so order today and get 15% off your purchase at skylightframe.com/mysteries.
We've been raving about Lumi for a while now, and with good reason. It's a revolutionary whole-body deodorant crafted by an OBGYN to combat odor, not just in your underarms, but also for your feet, intimate areas, and anywhere else you need it. Lumi's unique pH balance formula has been clinically proven to keep odor at bay all day long, boasting over 275,000 glowing 5-star reviews.
Thanks to its pH-balanced composition, Lumi is safe for use everywhere, even in sensitive areas. Unlike typical fragrance deodorants that merely mask odor, Lumi harnesses the power of mandelic acid to prevent odor from forming in the first place, serving as your personal pre-odorant.
I'm really fond of the Lumi wipes, which I like to keep on hand in my purse. They're perfect for post-gym freshness or during those marathon days that seem endless. And if you're thinking, I shower, I don't need Lumi. That's great. Huge fan of showers. But Lumi has been shown to outperform soap alone in controlling odor. It's that extra boost of confidence you need when navigating the world of social interactions.
Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like a mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping. As a special offer for our listeners, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code. And if you combine the 15% off with the already discounted starter pack, that equals over 40% off their starter pack. Use code MOMS for 15% off your first purchase at LumiDeodorant.com. That's code MOMS at LumiDeodorant.com.
Now back to the episode. So before the break, we were discussing this guy, Albert, and his financial crimes. And at this point in the story, he has taken his daughter, Sheena. They've fled the country, and people are really trying to figure out how to get their money back and really trying to contact Sheena to make sure she's okay in the midst of this ongoing investigation into Albert's financial crimes. So unbeknownst to anyone back home, Albert had assumed the identity of a WFSI customer named David Wallace Davis, and he was living in England under this identity with his daughter Sheena, who was completely dependent on him. The real David Wallace Davis had operated a feed store in Woodstock, and Albert did his tax returns. David went to Albert for a loan once and provided his birth certificate in order to get this loan, which is ultimately how Albert was able to steal David's identity. Albert once again started offering investment services, or rather, investment scams, in England, and that's how he eventually met Ronald Platt and Elaine Boyes. It was late in 1990 when Albert first met Elaine, who was a receptionist at an arts dealership. He introduced himself as David Davis and explained that he was interested in starting an antique business, and he offered her a job working for him. Elaine declined the offer because she was working to save money so that she could move to Canada with her boyfriend Ronald. Albert, though, didn't give up, and he soon gained the couple's trust through gifts and flattery and managed to convince Elaine and Ronald to create a company that he would have complete control over called Cavendish Corporation Limited. This man loves to start a new business. It's so hard. I don't understand why he keeps doing it.
How is he making it look so easy?
How do you convince somebody to start a company is my question. Like, That's a lot of gifts and flattery, I'll tell you that much.
It really is. I know. That part is just, to me, I don't understand. I like to think that I would not be persuaded to do something like this, but it does happen. It's absolutely really, truly mind-boggling. It kind of makes you wonder, like, what exactly was this guy like in person? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he had to be extremely charming and, like, make you think he's trustworthy.
Right.
I don't get it.
I know. I fully think I would fall for one of these scams just because I wouldn't want to make him feel bad if he like was doing nice things for me. So, by the way, if you want to scam me, great idea. That's
all you have to do is pretend like you're helping me.
Yeah, just be nice to me. You can scam me. So Elaine and Ronald were the company's directors and officers, with Elaine being the sole shareholder of the company. But despite having these positions, Albert fully controlled every aspect of this company, and Elaine and Ronald did as he said, including doing things like opening bank accounts in their names in England, Switzerland, France, and Italy.
See, that's where you would get me. I would be like, why do I need to do that?
See, if he was just like, it's the European way, I'd be like, okay, all right, I don't know. So Albert also helped Ronald set up an electronics business for himself. In 1992, Albert generously bought one-way plane tickets for Elaine and Ronald to fly to Calgary, Canada in February of 1993. The couple gave their personal information and rubber stamps of their signatures, and Elaine even made Albert her power of attorney, all in the process of supposedly making them his business partners. Albert also gave the couple money to start their new life in Canada. Ronald's family later said that they felt like Ronald was flattered by Albert because of all these gifts and attention, but they felt that Albert may have targeted Ronald to manipulate him into giving up his identity. Ronald's family described him as being a bit gullible, and they were surprised to learn that Albert gave Ronald money to start a business because it didn't really make any sense why Albert would do that. Ronald's family was extremely leery of Albert, who they thought was named David Davis. But Ronald was very private, and he really didn't give his family a ton of information about Albert or the nature of their friendship. And I'm sure if his family's, like, not super excited about Albert, that he's not going to give them more information.
He's going to tell them even less, right?
Yeah, it's going to be very quiet. So once Elaine and Ronald were out of England and off to start their new life in Canada, Albert started using Ronald's identity, and Sheena sometimes said her name was Elaine. Albert was also using the bank accounts he had the couple open before they left. He also went on to rent a house in Ronald's name in a small village called Woodham Walter. This house is on a cul-de-sac, and it was called Little London Farm. This note here, I did not know this. If this is still true, please let us know. Apparently, in some English villages, your house doesn't really have a house number. It has a little name.
I love it.
So cute.
I know. That's adorable. I don't know what I would name my house. Maybe just Little Farm.
Animal Farm. Mine would just be Little Blue House Needs Some Work. Mow Your Yard. Something like that. And so he and Sheena would end up living here for the next 3 years. And here's where things start getting really weird. The neighbors actually thought that Albert and Sheena were a married couple. They thought the age difference was strange, sure, but since they were known to their neighbors and stuff as the Platts, they just assumed that Albert and Sheena were married and that's what was going on.
And Albert and Sheena were not correcting them about this assumption that they were a married couple. So back in Canada, Albert had been charged with several crimes related to the misappropriation of millions of dollars, as well as theft, fraud, and money laundering. It was learned that he had stolen money from investments made in his businesses and then opened two bank accounts in Toronto, one of which was actually a Switzerland-based bank, and that's where he was putting the stolen money. He also liquidated assets belonging to the United Canvas Corporation and put that money in the hidden accounts as well. Albert also bought gold bars and foreign currency, which he put in another account in Geneva. A lawsuit in 1998 indicated that Albert had stolen over $2.8 million and only $800,000 of that had been recovered. It's believed that Albert started stealing his clients' money around 1985. In the early 90s, when his divorce was going on, he was stealing and hiding money, but he was claiming to be broke due to his custody battle and all of the legal fees. By early 1993, the divorce was final, and investigators had enough evidence to charge Albert with 19 counts of theft, fraud, and money laundering, and a warrant was then issued for his arrest. Although court documents said that Albert had stolen, as we said, around $2.8 million, newspapers were reporting that he actually stole anywhere between $3.2 to $8 million. In July of 1993, Elaine, who has been living in Canada with Ronald, returned to England because her sister was getting married and she was going to attend the wedding. But she ended up deciding to stay in England once she got back home because she really wasn't enjoying living in Canada anyway. Ronald decided to stay in Canada and the two of them ended up breaking up.
At this time, Sheena is nowhere to be found. Albert told Elaine that Sheena was visiting her sister in the U.S., but according to medical records, Sheena would have been 7 months pregnant at the time Elaine returned to England. Even though Sheena had occasionally been using Elaine's name, it really wasn't a problem for them that Elaine had moved back because she was living far away from where Albert and Sheena's house was. In April of 1996, Albert was added to Interpol's Most Wanted list, and he was ranked as number 4. He was put on a red notice that was sent to 180 countries. So in the article where this was reported, Barbara was quoted saying that the police had stopped looking for her daughter, and she felt as if she was the only person who cared where Sheena was and about her well-being. I can't imagine looking for your child in the same country you're in, but to have an international, like all different laws, all different rules, you don't know the place, like I can't even imagine how scary and a nightmare it would be. Yeah. So Barbara did hire a PI to try and find Sheena, which her friends, family, and neighbors held fundraisers to help pay for. A few months later, in the summer of 1996, the real Ronald Platt returned to England after he had lived in Canada for several years. At this point, Albert's still using his identity, and now he's in charge of accounting at a place called Solutions in Therapy. I'd like to take this moment to thank the people that help us with our accounting because they're very honest and they do a great job.
Yes.
And they also, some of them listen to this show, and so hello.
Yes.
According to police, though, it was about July 20th when Albert took Ronald out on his sailboat, Lady Jane, near Devon, which is where Albert kept his boat. And Ronald was never seen alive again. On July 21st, Albert called into work and said he was in an accident and had been injured and would be out of work for about a week. On July 28th, Ronald Platt's partially decomposed body was found after it got tangled in a fisherman's net with a 10-pound plow anchor. The fisherman called the Brixham Coast Guard and reported the body. He pulled his boat into the harbor to wait for police to come meet him. The officer expected that the body would be that of a young man who had actually disappeared in a boating accident earlier that week. But when he examined the body, he realized it was an older man who had been in the water longer than that amount of time the young man was missing. The younger man's body was found a week later, but the two bodies were found to be from unrelated incidents.
It was determined through decomposition that Ronald's body had been submerged for less than a week. He was found wearing a blue and white checkered shirt, a leather belt, and green corduroy trousers with the pockets turned inside out. All of his clothing had tags from Canadian clothing companies. Ronald also had an expensive Rolex watch on his wrist that had stopped working at the time 11:35 on July 22nd. This was a type of watch that was self-winding and would run for 40 hours, so it was calculated back that 40 hours before July 22nd would be sometime on July 20th. It was found that Ronald died from drowning, but there were also several bruises on his body and a 4-inch cut on the back of his head. They couldn't determine whether this injury on his head happened before or after his death, but they did say that if he had sustained this injury prior to his death, it could have caused unconsciousness. It was later determined that the anchor was attached to Ronald's pants and that the bruises on his body were from the anchor hitting him. Police couldn't figure out how Ronald got into the English Channel where he was found. After running some experiments to determine whether the current could have moved Ronald's body, they realized that the anchor would have prevented any movement whatsoever, and Ronald must have been dumped exactly where his body was found. Albert's sailboat, the Lady Jane, was found in the Dart River, which is almost 200 miles away from where Ronald lived. Identifying Ronald's remains took some time due to the state of decomposition. Dental records and tattoos were used to help confirm his identity, but what really sealed the deal was tracking the serial number on that Rolex watch that he was wearing. Each Rolex has a unique serial number that can actually be traced back to the person who bought it. So the Rolex offices in England were able to look up that number, and they found that watch had been serviced 3 times, and all 3 times it was taken in for service, Ronald Platt's name was the one listed on the service record, so that they were like, that's definitely who this is.
Once they had Ronald's name, they started their investigation to find out what happened to him. First, they visited Ronald's house where they spoke with the landlord. The landlord gave the police the name of a reference that was listed on Ronald's rental application. This was someone named David W. Davis. And remember, this is the fake identity that old Albert is using when he first meets Ronald. So police contact David, aka Albert, who told them that he had not seen Ronald for several months and he was actually under the impression that Ronald was in France. Albert even said that he gave Ronald money for his trip, which makes me crazy. And we talk about this all the time, somebody trying to still put themselves in this like hero position. Like,
right.
Oh, but I did do this nice thing. So Albert also said that Ronald had served in the army before. So investigators were able to contact army officials and obtain Ronald's dental records, which ended up being a match to the body that had been found. He also said Ronald's mail had been redirected to his house. So Albert had, I guess he's trying to say that Ronald redirected his mail to his house while he was in France, but nothing important had come for him since he was gone, according to Albert.
I guess that's a way for him to also explain why he would have mail at his home addressed to Ronald Platt, because he's using his identity. So, like, at least this gives the police an explanation for, like, if you find anything at my house. This isn't weird. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, look the other way.
Right. So Albert said he wasn't sure if Ronald had a tattoo on his hand, but he confirmed that he did own a Rolex watch. After Ronald's identity was confirmed, his next of kin were contacted and his brother was brought in to identify his body. And his brother was able to recognize Ronald's tattoo. After his brother confirmed that the body was his, officers went back to Albert's house to talk to him again. But they actually went to the wrong house this time. They went to the neighbor's. And the neighbor who answered the door told officers that the house they're looking for was Little London Farm, and that was next door. The officers asked if Little London Farm was where David Davis lived, and the neighbor was confused and said, no, that's where Ronald Platt and his wife and young daughters lived. So remember, Albert and his daughter Sheena have moved into the house and assumed the identities of Ronald and Elaine. So these neighbors, of course, have no idea that his real name is Albert, and neither did the police. Officers were confused and tried to make sense of the situation because they had literally just spoken to Ronald Platt's brother and confirmed that he was dead. But they also knew that Ronald wasn't married and he didn't have any kids. So they figured out that this David Davis person had stolen Ronald's identity. What they still hadn't figured out is that Albert's name wasn't David Davis either.
Wild.
I know. It's a lot to keep track of all this. Just know that if Albert or David or Ronald come up, it's likely it's the same person.
Right. So investigators were immediately suspicious and they started digging even further and found that all of David Davis's bills had been signed and paid for by Ronald Platt, including after the real Ronald was dead. So at this point, it was clear that Ronald Platt hadn't accidentally drowned and it was looking a lot more like he had been murdered. They found out through cell phone records that Albert was in the area that the murder took place around July 21st or 22nd, and that he had made two calls to a water taxi on July 21st. Further, they were able to identify two different hotels where Albert and Ronald apparently stayed together. The owner at one of the hotels said that on July 9th, Albert and Ronald called him from the boat and said they were going to be coming and checking in. They ended up getting there around 11 p.m., and Albert mentioned to the hotel owner that he had killed a cat on the way back, which I don't know why he would even, like, mention that, but definitely is a weird thing to say. But that's exactly why the hotel owner remembered who Albert and Ronald were, because he's like, oh, yeah, that's the guy who, like, randomly mentioned that he hurt an animal.
That's a psycho.
Of course I remember him. Right. So Albert also stayed at a different hotel nearby. And at first his daughter Sheena was with him, but then Ronald came to stay and eventually Albert left and Ronald stayed there by himself for about a week or so. Investigators searched Albert's sailboat and found a hair sample that ended up belonging to Ronald. And they also found a bag from a store called Sport Nautique that had Ronald's fingerprints on it. And that further confirmed that he was on board Albert's boat. It was theorized that Albert killed Ronald because he had returned from Canada, and that was a real problem for him since he was actively using Ronald's identity and had been for years. But when Ronald moved back, he moved into a house that was very close to where Albert was living, so Albert killed Ronald to get him out of the picture before any problems arose. Prosecutors later claimed that back on December 25th, 1995, Ronald and Albert were in a car together and they got pulled over. This is the craziest story. So Albert is driving the car, and when the police asks to see his ID or for him to identify himself, he said that his name is Ronald Platt, while Ronald Platt is sitting in the passenger seat next to him. So I don't know what the deal is with that. Why didn't Ronald speak up and say, what are you doing? But the officer never asked, you know, the passenger, the real Ronald Platt, to identify himself. But if he had, that whole scheme could have blown up. So I just thought that was so wild that they actually got pulled over together and Albert gave Ronald's name. That's...
Yeah. I mean, that's very brazen, but I wonder, like, what Albert said to him. Because, you know, he had to have said something.
Right. Like, you can't just spring that on someone.
Yeah. Like, there had to be some, like, quick moment, like, don't say anything. I'll tell you after or whatever. Yeah.
So the prosecution pondered whether or not that incident, you know, that whole thing, that run-in with the police made Albert paranoid about, you know, the danger that he was really in by using Ronald's identity with Ronald being back in England himself. And we still have more to get into with this story after one last break to hear a word from this week's sponsors.
I'm all about comfort, and wearing anything that doesn't immediately make me say, ah, that's better, is just not something I'm willing to wear. Thanks to Honeylove, my whole life is, ah, better. Not only do I have Honeylove shapewear, which is a must when it comes to shapewear, but their bras are the only ones I'll wear because they've nailed every single aspect of it.
If you can't say that about your bras or shapewear, you gotta check out Honeylove. Whether you're a bride headed for your wedding or just headed out with friends, Honeylove is the go-to for all things shapewear. And while Honeylove is insanely comfortable, it would be nothing if it wasn't effective. That means Honeylove shapewear will never roll down, and it works with your body to compress the areas you want compressed and lift the areas you want lifted.
I'm a huge fan of the Superpower Short. It helps sculpt and smooth from my stomach to my thighs while giving me the perfect amount of compression. The biggest compliment I could give Honeylove is that it works, followed closely by, I forget I'm even wearing shapewear.
Treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/moms20. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/moms20. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Shape your life with Honeylove.
Life requires compromise, whether it's with loved ones or your taste buds. But when it comes to health, there's no room for negotiation. We've all had our share of doctor's office horror stories, but there's a solution, ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. It's a fantastic platform for finding doctors who not only prioritize your health, but also make you feel comfortable.
Booking appointments online and reading real patient reviews are just a few of its excellent features. Let's face it, scheduling a doctor's appointment isn't typically a joyous occasion. Most times it's prompted by illness, pain, or worry, which can lead to anxiety. But ZocDoc eases those worries by offering real patient reviews and easy filtering options, ensuring you get the care you need when you need it.
Personally, I've had really great success in using ZocDoc to schedule appointments for different members of my family, all without the hassle of phone calls and receptionist small talk. Give it a try. It's really a game changer.
Go to ZocDoc.com/mysteries and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/mysteries. ZocDoc.com/mysteries.
And now back to the episode. So police at this point have their suspicions. They're following up. They accidentally ran into these neighbors who have kind of put them on this path to realizing this David Davis, Albert / Ronald Platt could very well all be the same person. So at this point, they're trying to close in on Albert. And they learn from his neighbors that he and Sheena had left town for a week in mid-September. They told the neighbors they were going to visit Sheena's dying father in the U.S. Keep in mind, Albert is actually her father. So they leave again during the first week of October. Around the same time, Albert's coworkers started noticing some inconsistencies with their accounting. But when they confronted Albert, who was in charge of the financing for the company, he was able to weasel his way out of trouble. Later in October, the real Elaine boys talked to Albert on the phone and asked him about Ronald. So Albert tells her that Ronald is in France, which comes as a surprise to Elaine. She's felt like this wasn't Ronald at all, but she really didn't question it any further. Remember, Elaine and Ronald had broken up, so she hasn't talked to him in a long time. It wasn't long, though, before police informed Elaine that Ronald was actually dead. And they brought up Albert and told Elaine that Albert actually knew that Ronald had been dead for a few months. So at this point, Elaine is totally confused. She's just talked to Albert, who says, Ronald's in France, but now the police are saying not only is Ronald dead, but Albert knew that and he's known it for a long time. Things got even scarier when Albert randomly showed up to visit Elaine in person on October 30th. Elaine was terrified and she fully believed she was face to face with a murderer. Albert questioned Elaine about what she told the police and they talked about Ronald. After this confrontation, Elaine called the police. And the police planned to raid his home and arrest him the following morning. On October 31st, that's exactly what happened, and the arrest was made without incident. He was arrested while trying to hail a taxi outside his home at 10:15 a.m. He actually got inside the taxi, which quickly drove off, but the police were able to chase it down and stop him.
Imagine being the taxi driver, like, what is happening right now?
I know. And he's like, just drive faster. I have an open-ended plane ticket. Gotta get to the airport.
So Albert told the arresting officers that his name was Ronald Platt. But when they told him, you know, the jig is up, we know that Ronald Platt is dead, Albert then told him his name is David Wallace Davis. And he also told them that he was from the United States. So other than giving this false information, he was pretty uncooperative with the police. They also first believed Sheena, who was now 21 years old, was Albert's wife. But then they did later find out that it was his daughter. The true identity of Albert Walker was revealed through fingerprints from the Canadian police about 2 weeks after he was arrested. The British authorities compared the fingerprints they took from Albert to prints that were already in the system of wanted fugitives, and that's how they got a match. They actually had his fingerprints in the system already from the time his wife Barbara had him arrested for threatening to kill her. A couple of hours after Albert was apprehended, Sheena was also arrested at home. At the time of her arrest, she was reportedly found packing gold bars and cash into suitcases. but she ended up being released on bail with no charges against her, and she was prohibited from leaving England until the police kind of cleared things up and gave her the okay. At this time, Sheena had two young daughters who were about 2.5 years old and 11 months old. On the birth certificate for the youngest child, Ronald Platt is listed as the father, and the child's last name is Platt. And this baby was born in January of 1996, and the mother on the birth certificate is listed as Elaine Boyes, but the police confirm that both of these little girls did belong to Sheena. Sheena told authorities that she used Elaine's name on her daughter's birth certificates because she had used Elaine's ID to get medical treatment while she was pregnant.
Imagine being the police and trying to unravel this. Like, every step you take is like, wait, who is this now? Right. What is this? Yeah, it's right. Wild.
And especially, and now, how complicated is this mess? Now you have babies that have a birth certificate with not their parents' names on it.
Yeah. Like,
what a disaster. So Sheena cooperated with police and told them the truth about Albert being her dad, not her husband, although she did lie about what they were doing in England in the first place. She said that her dad was an American businessman who fled the U.S. to prevent his ex-wife from taking money from the business.
Sheena ended up being reunited with her family and went to live with them, where she stayed hidden from the public eye. Things were, of course, a little awkward at first because Sheena hadn't seen her mom or family in 6 years, so it's basically like starting over. Police end up finding 13 gold bars and £250,000 in Albert's house, along with a lengthy list of other assets in either his or Sheena's possession. These assets included the sailboat, which was bought under Ronald's name, as well as gold bars, two oil paintings under David Davis's name, three oil paintings under his company name, Swiss currency, and keys to storage lockers. These storage lockers were located about 3 hours away, and they held gold, money, ID information, and a GPS device that was determined to be from the sailboat. When investigators looked into the data on the GPS system, they confirmed that the Lady Jane was 3.8 nautical miles from the exact position where Ronald's body was found. The GPS had been turned off while at sea, and when it was turned back on, it reverted to the boat's last location, which were the coordinates where Ronald's body was found. They also found a receipt from a store called Sport Nautic that had 7 items on it, including a 10-pound plow anchor. Further investigation showed that all of the money that Albert used in England was from the money he stole in Canada. After Albert was arrested, his 17-year-old son was interviewed and said he had no desire to speak to his father. He confirmed that his sister Sheena and her daughters were back in Canada, and things were hard because she wasn't even able to leave the house at this point due to the media frenzy.
A committal hearing, or basically what we would call a preliminary hearing in the U.S., was held on March 24, 1997 to determine whether there was enough evidence against Albert for a murder trial. The contents of this hearing weren't made public, but in April, Albert pleaded not guilty to murder. His trial began on June 22, 1998 in Crown Court. Prosecutors presented evidence that Albert bought an anchor that would have been too light for the Lady Jane, but was heavy enough to weigh a body down. Not to mention, the sailboat already had 2 anchors on it, so there really wasn't a need for him to purchase a third. Zinc found on Ronald's belt matched the zinc that was found on the anchor, which they said proved that the anchor was tied to the belt. They believe that Ronald was hit over the head and possibly knocked unconscious before being thrown overboard with the anchor attached to him, and that when he was hit over the head, some of his hair got on the boat. Sheena was a witness for the prosecution, and she testified that she left Canada with her father willingly, but she admitted that while Albert had been in jail, he had been asking her to lie during the trial and claim that she couldn't remember. She ended up going straight to the police and telling them what her dad was asking her to do, and she stopped communicating with him in February of 1997. Albert's defense claimed that he hadn't seen Ronald for over a week before the police said that he died. Albert took the stand and denied having anything to do with Ronald's murder, but he did admit to his financial crimes back in Canada and said he was ready to serve his time for those crimes. Albert said that Sheena would call him Daddy or Dad and sometimes called him Ron, and she would even call him Dad or Daddy in front of people who thought that they were a couple. And so the prosecutor asked Albert if people thought that was strange, right. You know, and Albert just said, why? And so the prosecutor was basically like, because you and your daughter were posing as a married couple. Like, Is there nothing seems weird about that to you, Albert?
No, apparently not. To even say why is so wild. Yeah, like. So on July 6, 1998, the jury deliberated for less than 2 hours before finding Albert guilty of murdering Ronald Platt. He was automatically sentenced to life in prison the same day he was convicted, but it would be up to the judge to determine how many years he would have to serve before being eligible for parole. In 1999, Albert appealed his conviction, but it was denied, and unless new evidence was found, he was told he did not have the grounds for an appeal and could not submit another one. The Toronto Star reported that Albert could have appealed to a panel of three judges, but it would have been expensive and unlikely to succeed in Albert's case. In 2001, Albert decided he wanted to go back to Canada, so he filed a petition to be transferred to a Canadian prison. However, his return to Canada would mean he'd have to face charges on 37 financial-related counts against him there. He requested these conditions for his transfer and said that he would tell police where some of the stolen money was if he had to serve less time before being considered for parole. His request was eventually granted in 2005, and he was moved to a Canadian prison. But by this time, Albert's health has deteriorated and he was unwell to the point that he actually had to be accompanied by a nurse during the transfer. Albert's ex-wife Barbara and the victims of his financial crimes in Canada were angry that he was transferred back, and Barbara worried for her safety now that Albert was back in Canada. But the Canadian police were thrilled to have him back because they wanted to question him and try to locate some of the stolen money. Sheena was also scared about Albert's return to Canada and said she was just trying to put everything behind her and didn't want any contact with him. She said she didn't know where any of the stolen money was and that her dad manipulated her just like he did everyone else. Albert was sent to a Kingston prison in Ontario but was transferred to a different prison in 2013 when that one closed down.
In 2007, Albert finally pleaded guilty to over a dozen theft and fraud charges and was sentenced to 4 years in prison plus an additional year for violating Canadian Bankruptcy Act. In 2015, when Albert was 70, he applied for day parole, but he got denied, and he applied again in 2021 and was once again denied. In 2022, Albert had 5 escorted absences from the prison, and he started going to church outside the prison with an escort for a total of 23 escorted absences. At this time, he was also taking computer courses and looking into health insurance for when he said he was hopefully going to be released from prison on a permanent basis. In 2023, he tried again for day parole, and this time he was allowed a 60-day limited day parole option, and this was to participate in a relapse prevention program. The conditions of his day parole were made specifically with Albert's criminal history in mind, and the parole board said that they were aware of his history of manipulation and lies. Albert was required to do a number of things, including reporting all relationships to his parole supervisor, having no contact with female children under the age of 16 unless with a responsible adult who knows his history. He had to provide documented financial information on a regular schedule, steer clear of financial or investment work for any person, charity, or business, and he was ordered to have no identification other than his own, no contact with his victims, including his ex-wife, and he had to stay out of Ontario. In February of this year, 2024, Albert was denied full day parole because the board said it would be just too hard to control Albert's access to potential victims. The board wrote, quote, "Given your refusal to be accountable and address your risk issues in a responsible way, the board believes that your risk is not manageable on this type of release." So Albert is currently serving his life sentence at the William Head Institution, and his crimes have been featured in documentaries, books, movies, and even a play.
Okay, this story is so wild start to finish because there's so much going on. Not one identity, at least two that we know of, because who knows how many other things he was doing. And I thought that one parole thing with you can't have contact with female children under 16 unless with a responsible adult who knows his history. That is
so very specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like also who determines who a responsible adult is. Like,
right.
I have a lot of questions there.
Well, I have a lot of questions. And why not just any kids? Why females only? Like all that seems weird to me.
Oh, because
if you're like a danger to children.
Yeah.
If you're a danger to children.
If we're having to write this and say you need another adult, maybe you shouldn't get this. Maybe right. that should not be on the table for you. But I really feel bad for Sheena. I feel bad for the whole family. I feel bad for everybody who put money yeah. with this guy. And of course, Ronald and his family and Elaine, I can't imagine. And like, just because he was like, oh, this isn't convenient for me anymore. I don't want to get caught. So you have to die.
Yeah. And just the elaborate nature of it all, like finding someone in England and then literally funding and helping them move out of the country so you can take over their identity is just like, that's crazy. That's wild.
It's so crazy. Yeah. There's much easier ways to do it. Mandy knows this week my daughter's identity has been stolen. So like you can do it with people that are alive. I promise you. It yeah. happens.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just, the whole concept of stolen identities is truly
It's, yeah, you it's just crazy. Don't think, I don't know. Well, we wouldn't do it. So it's right. like, we can't understand it. So anyway.
Absolutely. Okay, Melissa, well, that was the story for this week. Quite a story indeed. But let's turn the page and move on to our last thing before we go for the week.
Let's do it. So the idea this week is really just three topics. We're each going to give each other one at a time. And you have, we'll say 15 seconds. We don't necessarily need to do a timer, but to name five things in that category. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. Let's do this.
My category is?
Hold on. Okay. I'm
types of sandwiches.
Okay. Ham and cheese, grilled cheese, BLT, chicken sandwich, chicken salad sandwich, egg salad sandwich.
Wow. I'm ready. Sub sandwich.
Girl, I love sandwiches.
I'm hungry. I'm ready for a sandwich right now.
Okay. Mandy, let's see. How about this? Words to explain the weather in Florida.
Hot, sticky, gross, humid. Beautiful.
Yeah, I was like, this does not sound like Mandy. This sounds like me because it's actually a beautiful day here today.
Yes, it is. It's actually gorgeous here today.
I wasn't expecting that from you.
Okay. Let's see. Melissa, what do you got for kitchen gadgets?
Okay. Can opener, microwave, blender, ice cream maker, garbage disposal.
Nice.
No. Is that a garbage? Well, pizza cutter.
There you go.
Okay. Pizza cutter. All right. Wow. Mandy. You'll like this. Ready? Movies that scare you. Take a second to think about it.
Movies that scare me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
you
don't
better like... name that one
that you oh my and I gosh. Both watched recently. Midsommar.
There we go.
That movie
was I don't terrifying. Even care if you get any more.
That movie was absolutely terrifying. I don't know. I don't get scared by movies.
Okay, scary movies. Go. Five.
It.
Okay.
Hide and Seek.
Ooh, okay.
I love that movie. Ooh, is Gone Girl a scary movie?
I love that movie. I really love that movie too.
It's not really so much scary as it is like psychological.
Yeah.
I like that. I haven't seen a scary movie in a long time. Chucky.
Okay. Your time's up. Scream. You know? Scream. Scream one. Scream two. Scream three. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. My last one for you is Terms of Endearment.
Okay. Sweetie, dear, baby, goof troop, honey. I don't even know where that came from. Yeah.
Love bug?
Baby girl.
Princess. Love bug.
If somebody called me princess, I would slap them.
Boo thing?
Boo thing. Oh, yeah. I like that song that was like very popular on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun. Okay, last one I have. Okay, ready for this, Mandy? Conspiracy theories, names of conspiracy theories. We talked about the Denver airport earlier, so I was excited for this.
Mandela effect.
Okay.
Oh gosh, chemtrails.
Keep going.
Weather modification.
Ooh, I don't even know that one. Keep going.
I don't know.
Denver airport.
Oh, Denver airport. Of course, is when the moon landing.
Ooh, okay.
And let's see, parallel universes.
Oh, I have to say, oh my gosh, I've been very concerned with how much I'm starting to believe some of those, especially the parallel universe jumping timelines. That's it, Mandy. We should go over. We're going to go over on Patreon That's now. It. If you haven't signed up, you can do that now. There's a free episode on there, and we hope you'll check that out. I also have another show, Criminality, and there's an episode up this week on Ty Pennington. Do you remember Extreme Makeover Home Edition?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's about him.
Oh, boy.
And it's fun. There's some good clips on there.
Very nice. I will have to check that out. All right, guys, thank you for listening. We will be back next week. Same time, same place, new story.
Have a great week.
Bye.